and welcome to Keeper Cup Podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. It is Sunday, June 1st. I guess it'll be Monday, June 2nd by the time you listen to this, but it's Sunday, June 1st for us, which means, I don't know, I always think of the season as 6 months, even though it's not exactly 6 months. And as the start and end of each month is like a sixth of the season. So it makes us a third of the way through the season, which I think isn't even totally accurate, but I don't care. That's how I'm thinking about it. And Pete, it's time for a lot of things. It's time to decide if you're buying or selling. It's time to start making moves. It's time to decide which players are legit, which players aren't. Are you starting to make moves in any of your leagues? You starting to give up on any teams or get aggressive in your buying?
It's funny you say that because the Yordan Alvarez news yesterday really made me think in a few spots, it's probably time to sell. Just heavily invested in that player across so many formats. Tyler Glasnow recently getting added to the 60-day IL instead of the 15-day. So there are some things that are happening that I would totally understand why people start to sell. Me, I'm too competitive. I'm not ready to yet, but the signs are definitely showing in a few spots.
Yeah, I am having, this happened to me last year in AutoNew too. Like, all outside of AutoNew, I'm doing well. We co-manage a dynasty league that is in a head-to-head league that we're having a rough week this week, but we're firmly in the playoff mix. My CBS league, I'm doing fine. I'm in another dynasty league where I'm in third now, and I've been buying and trying to shape that team to get ready for a run. And yet my AutoNew teams are just a disaster for the most part. The podcaster league, I'm in second and trying to, I've closed that gap significantly in the last week or so. And so I'm about to figure out what buying I need to do there to close that gap further. But man, it's been an ugly year. And so I'm in the process of selling in a couple places. I'm getting ready to buy. I've been buying in a couple places, but I'm definitely, the teams where it's been ugly, I'm just ready to be done. I had one league that I was hoping I would pull back closer, and it just hasn't happened. It did for a bit, and then I had a disastrous day yesterday, disastrous week really this week. And yeah, it hasn't been a fun start to the season, Pete. It hasn't been fun.
It really has not. I'm firmly in the same camp on that one.
Well, let's talk about players who have had a fun week. Let's talk about our head-to-head heroes. I've got a guy I want to talk about here, and as much as I want to talk about what a good week he had, because it's been a good week, I'm more interested in discussing what is up with this player, because he's not who I thought he was, and that's Jeremy Pena. Jeremy Pena this week, 3 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 5 runs, 5 RBIs, a .375 average, .423 on base. Often in these, one week samples, it's like this guy hit .375 with a .500 BAP. No, he has a .316 BAPIP. That's not driving it. He just had an awesome, awesome week. And then you go look at his season line, and this is a guy who coming into this season, Pena was, had been healthy, had played 136, 150, 157 games. So basically playing full seasons the last 3 years. He was averaging, just over 15, under 16 home runs per season. He was stealing bases at a decent clip, about 15 stolen bases a season. So, 15 season, nothing to sneeze at, but nothing great. He had a .261 career batting average coming into this season. In a good offense, he'd been scoring runs and driving in runs at a decent rate. So, he was in a 5x5 format, a solid player. Not a guy who's winning you leagues, but a guy you're happy to have on your roster. From an AutoNew points league in 4x4, this guy's he had a .308 career WOBA coming into this season. He wasn't super valuable in those formats, right? He didn't walk enough. He didn't get enough. He didn't hit for enough power, not high enough ISO. There wasn't enough there for those formats without the steals, without the RBIs, things like that, adding a little bit of juice. Then all of a sudden this year, in 246 played appearances, 58 games played, He has 9 home runs and looks like he's on pace for his second career 20 home run season, possibly, you know, 22 home runs in 2022. Looks like he's got a good shot to surpass that. He's got 9 stolen bases, which puts him on pace to break 20. He got 20 last year, but to break 20 for the first time ever. That, you know, I mentioned a 261 career average. He's hitting 305. And yes, he has a 324 BABIP, but he's got a career 310 BABIP. This isn't some crazy jump in BABIP. What he has done is increased his home run per fly ball rate from 11.7% for his career to 14.8% this year. He's hitting at a slightly higher line drive rate, but also more importantly, I think hitting fewer ground balls than he's ever hit. And so just getting the ball in the air a bit more. He is swinging less than ever. And it's not just chase rate. His chase rate's been sort of trending down over the years. It's down a little bit again this year, but he's being more selective in the zone. And as a result, is taking more called strikes than he has in the past, but his contact rate is way up. And so he's swinging through a lot fewer pitches. And in addition to making more contact, probably because he's being more selective in the zone, his hard hit rate is on track to be a career high. His barrel rate is not on track to be a career high, but it's up quite a bit from the last couple of years. And because he's striking out less, added to that better quality of contact, he's got a career high ex-WOBA of 342 to go along with a career high WOBA of 369. I don't know. I didn't expect this. I didn't see him as a guy. Like, I didn't look at the underlying skills for Jeremy Peña and think like, yeah, you know, he's still only 26, a breakout. Like, sure, a breakout was always possible, but I didn't expect it. I didn't see that coming. I thought he had sort of settled into being who he was, and he looks like a fundamentally better player this year.
Yeah, he does. You know, projection systems have him regressing a bit, which is to be expected.
Sure.
Because I don't think he's as good as he's been playing. I don't know. I'm kind of torn on him because it looks like he's becoming that kind of guy who relies on pulling and lifting the ball, and it's in Houston, which is great. I mean, you look at his home road splits, like he's batting over 100 points higher at home. His OPS is over 900 at home, but it's under 650 on the road. So he really is kind of becoming the kind of player that fits that bill. His pulled air percentage is a career high this year at 20.6%. That was at 15.2% last year. And that, you know, this change in approach hasn't coincided with like much of a difference under the hood. Like a max EV this year of 108.6 is just not impressive. So like it totally makes sense to be in on this player, especially when he's at home. I think he's going to continue to produce at home. It's hard for me to like, I mean, we've had this conversation about different players in the past. It's hard for me to be like, yeah, let's go Jeremy Peña, whole new player now, when I don't think he's become a better, I don't think he's more skilled or anything like that. I think he's still the same level skilled player I thought of before, who's like maybe a fringe 2020 guy. He's probably going to reach it this year. He's already halfway there, and we're only a third of the way through the season. Not that excited about him yet. Shortstop's also so deep, so he has that working against him as well.
Yeah, he does. And I will say that for all my starting off, like, oh, he looks like a totally different player. If you look at rolling graphs, look at a 15-game rolling average of his contact rate, right? Which I mentioned, his contact rate is up career high. He has had peaks this high, in fact, higher before. His swing percentage is down, right? He's being more selective. But he had valleys of swing rate lower than this last year. Now, he hasn't maintained those things as long as he's maintaining them right now. But even his overall performance, his WOBA, if you look at a rolling graph of his WOBA, let's make sure I'm looking at the right full set of data here. Why is this not giving me the choice I want? Here we go. This is what I want. Because it's the best it's been in the last couple years, but he had a peak like this right at the start of his career in terms of his WOBA. He had a peak very early last year, higher than this. And again, he is maintaining it longer. And that's the thing that stands out. And I think that the question you have to ask yourself if you're thinking about do I buy a guy like Peña? Do I sell high on him right now? Is is he showing something that he is, that he will be able to sustain? Because he's not showing, like, is he showing he can sustain something he hasn't sustained before? Because he isn't really showing a skill he hasn't demonstrated before, with one exception. That one exception is the K rate. His K rate, if you look at that rolling graph, is, it is fundamentally lower than it's been the last couple of years. He had some valleys a little bit lower, some periods of time where his strikeout rate was a little bit lower last year, but there was a clear, continuous year over year downward trend when you look at that 15 game rolling strikeout rate. And that's the one thing that I look at that really, really stands out with Peña, is he's getting better at avoiding strikeouts, and that's going to mean more balls in play. And the fact that he's doing that, so you were saying, like, you know, the max EV isn't any better, the average EV is about the same, the hard hit rate's up a bit, but not a ton. But all of those things, if he's maintaining those while making more contact, that's a good sign, right? Fewer strikeouts, oftentimes fewer strikeouts comes with, like, well, they had to, you know, they're taking fewer hard swings, things like that. And so all of those underlying Statcast numbers look worse, even though they're making more contact, right? Because barrel rate is a per contact, per batted ball event stat. So if you have a bunch of weaker batted ball events because you're taking defensive swings to avoid strikeouts, that's going to go down. It's not, which means that's not what he's doing. He's just making better contact with his best swings, right? He's making more, or I should say, more contact with his best swings. And so I think that is enough for me to believe that he is a better player than he was the last couple of years. Not that he's going to maintain what he's doing right now, but even if, like I said, you know, you talk about the projections are saying he's going to regress. Well, he's got a 369 WOBA right now. The regression they are expecting is down to anywhere from a 317 WOBA per ATC to a 328 WOBA per the bat. Like I said, his career coming in this year, he'd never had a year over 310. His career was 308, I think I said, coming into this season. It's like, that's a big step forward for him. And it's enough to move him from having been a just sort of barely league average bat the last 3 years, right? WRC plus almost is exactly 100 for his career, to being a good 10 to maybe 15% better than league average moving forward. And that's a meaningful improvement. So I think if you're deciding what to do with Peña, I think, like, I'm certainly not selling low. Like, I'm not out here saying, like, this is it, he's going to fall off a cliff, get rid of him. I think if you've got someone out there who's like, wow, he's got a 142 WRC plus, he's legitimately one of the, you know, top whatever shortstops that would make him, you should sell on that price. But if people are like, nah, he's going to go back to being what he was, like, I think you've done pretty well for yourself, and I think you can hold him and benefit.
Yeah, that's fair.
So who do you have? Who's your head-to-head hero for this week, Pete?
Well, my head-to-head hero this week is definitely a guy who I have as a sell high, but his performance has been really good, and that's Zach Littell, which is kind of fitting because Zach Littell yesterday pitched a complete game. He threw, it was like 117 pitches, which is the most pitches by a starting pitcher in baseball this year. He gave up two homers in that game, and both of them were to Jeremy Peña. So this is kind of an interesting head-to-head hero off, or I don't know what we want to call that. But I'm picking a pitcher once again this week because he had a two-star week and he was great in both. He went 2-0, 15.1 innings pitched, 13 hits, 4 earned runs, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts. So Zach Littell has been in a little bit of a groove for a while now. He hasn't given up more than 3 earned runs in an outing since April 10th. And I think this is more about, like, the type of pitcher he is than, like, specifically Zach Littell, because frankly, I could really care less about Zach Littell. He does have an outing against Miami coming up, so he's worth holding on to while he's on this hot streak. But these guys who are just, like, strike throwers and just pounding the zone and going deep into outings, I'm really starting to come around to those guys this year. If you're in a league that counts strikeouts per nine or something like that, then players like this are not very helpful. But right. Zach Littell, you know, yesterday, Michael Wacha, you know, I've talked about Seth Lugo in the past. I mean, Merrill Kelly doesn't completely fit this bill. His walks have been up, especially over his last three outings. But, like, I'm starting to be comfortable sacrificing some strikeouts for length and quality starts. And if you stack up on these guys, it hurts. But if you have a couple, it's kind of nice. And having a guy like Zach Littell over the last week has been really awesome. And I wouldn't be surprised if the king of throwing strikes, Zach Littell, does a nice job against a lineup that is basically a quad A lineup in Miami coming up. So I would hold on to him for his next start. And then if there's somebody out there who thinks Zach Littell is like a top 50 starter or something, trade him away and start building up. So not the most ringing endorsement for my head-to-head hero this week. I guess that was a little harsh, but hold and then sell high.
Yeah, he is such a fascinating guy for talking about the importance of knowing your format, right? And so when somebody asks, like, if somebody sent me a question on Blue Sky and was like, hey, should I be buying or selling Zach Littell? Like, it depends so much on where you're playing. And so let's talk a little bit about, I want to talk a little bit about that, just use him as an end to that. You mentioned the surface stats, right? 2.35 ERA this week. He had two quality starts if you're in a quality start league. And did he have two wins as well?
Yeah, he won both games.
Yeah. 0.91 whip, right? So your traditional 5x5 stats, even if you're in a quality starts league, like he did everything you could ask. And on top of that, the 10 strikeouts, if you're in like a weekly league where you slotted him into your lineup, like 10 strikeouts is good to get from a starting pitcher from weekly league. Sure, it took him two starts, but that's fine. It's not enough strikeouts maybe for a daily league or versus another two start starter, but it's pretty good. Like, it's fine. It'll play. Len, if you look at my CBS league, which is 5x5 with quality starts, but it adds strikeout to walk ratio, he doesn't walk anybody. So strikeout to walk ratio this week was 10. That's awesome, right? So he's been good in 5x5. He has been great in that CBS league. However, if I jump over to Autonew 4x4, in an Autonew 4x4 league, he has been okay because he also gave up a couple home runs, and so he's hurt your home run per nine. Everything else has been good. So 5x5, he's been really good. That CBS 6x6, he's been great. Autonew 4x4, he's been good, but not as great, right? Because now his strikeouts aren't very high, and because Autonew is a, for the most part, daily leagues, and is for the most, you're looking at an innings pitched cap, that strikeout per inning pitch really matters for Littell. Every inning he throws that he doesn't strike a guy out is an inning somebody else could have thrown and now is gone. And so that 10 strikeouts over 15.1 innings is not great. It's not as good as it is in your traditional 5x5 leagues. And so all of a sudden he's got a couple categories where he's not helping you in 4x4. Then if you go look at Autonew points leagues, his six inning start at the beginning of the week was great. 44.07 points over six innings is brilliant. That's everything you could ask for. Those two home runs yesterday means that his start yesterday was 22 points over nine innings. And that's actually bad. Like, if you started Zach Littell in a season long Autonew points league yesterday, he hurt your team. He made your team worse. Seems crazy, right? But like, that's how the scoring system works there. However, if you're in an Autonew points league that is head to head, then you have a game started cap, and all of a sudden what really matters is the points per game started, not the points per inning. And so the fact that he got you those nine innings and got you up to 22 points, the points per inning is low, but 22 points in a start, that'll play. That's a totally fine, like, if you know our head-to-head league that you and I are both in, league 13, is you're capped at nine starts per week. If that was one of your nine starts, that's fine. Like, that'll play. That's a useful start. So his week has been, like, depending on your format, has really varied. And so he's an interesting guy. I mean, I think if I were looking at him in my CBS league, I think he's sort of a buy because his strikeout per walk rate is so good that it helps make up for anything else he loses. If I'm looking at it in an Autonew points league, maybe in a head-to-head league, I'm intrigued. But in a season-long points league, like, he's been bad. And even this week, he only had one good start. And so he's a fascinating player from that perspective. And I think just a good illustration of how much format matters and why, when you are on Blue Sky or Twitter or in a Slack or a Discord and you ask any expert like, hey, should I take this trade or not? If you're not explaining your league format, it's really hard to answer that question sometimes.
Yeah, he's a guy who, to be clear, I don't think I want in almost any format going forward. So again, his usefulness has ranged despite like the surface being awesome, which is unfortunate because he has objectively pitched well. So if he's hurt you, that kind of sucks. But he's not a player who, just to be clear, long term, I have any interest in. So if after this Miami start, you're ready to move on, I think it'd be a good time to pull the trigger.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back from that break, we're going to start looking at some buy and sell decisions on interesting players so far this season. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. And after talking about our head-to-head heroes, we are now going to dive into some breakouts this year. And a question of like, is this legit or not? Are you buying or selling these guys? And not just buying or selling them, but we're gonna try to put some specific numbers around what you're buying or selling. Because it's really easy to be like, are you buying or selling James Wood? And it's like, yeah, he's going to be good. Okay, well, what does that mean? Right? What exactly are you buying? So we're going to start with James Wood. And James Wood, so I pulled up the Razzball Player Rater. James Wood in traditional 5x5 leagues is number 6 on the Razzball Player Rater. The guys ahead of him are Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Pete Crow Armstrong, Cal Raleigh, and Kyle Tucker. You've got the two best players in baseball in Judge and Ohtani. You've got another breakout who we're going to talk about later in PCA. You've got Cal Raleigh, who's both been awesome and is a catcher, right? And catcher's less of a mess this year, but it's always a little bit of a mess. And then you got Kyle Tucker. You got some like elite players ahead of him. And then you've got Wood. And I don't think we need to say like, yeah, he's definitely going to be a top 6 player the rest of the way. But Pete, are you buying or selling him as, let's say, a top 20 overall player moving forward, right? I mean, I think this is like, especially for your keeper leagues, like that's the real question here is like, is this a guy who's just going to be locked in as a like first or maybe second round draft pick for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I absolutely think he is a top 20 player going forward. The only hang up that people could have would be his whiff rate, ultimately his strikeout rate. And that was a problem for him in the minor leagues until he reached AAA, and it was just like he needs to be in the major leagues because this is kind of a waste of his time. However, he has shown marginal improvement in his strikeout rate this year. He's down about 2 percentage points, and his walk rate has gone up, showing a little bit more discipline at the plate. But the results on batted balls are just so good for a 22-year-old who, like, this isn't out of nowhere. This is a guy who was the number one prospect in baseball, centerpiece for Juan Soto, all that stuff. And it just kind of looks like it's coming together for him. The average exit velocity at 94 miles an hour as a 22-year-old, that is in the 95th percentile in baseball. And that is coming with a max exit velocity of almost 118 miles an hour. So this guy hits the absolute snot out of the ball. He's quick. He's going to produce across the board in 5x5. He's in an optimal spot in the lineup, obviously, because the Nationals are so young and up and coming. I guess you wish he hit the ball in the air more. You know, that's definitely part of the equation for him. But again, just 22. And even with how much he hits it on the ground and how little he pulls it in the air, which has been a constant criticism of him since he got promoted, he still has 16 homers. Like, this is a player with like number one overall upside if he wasn't playing in an era of Ohtani and Judge. So, right. Yes, I am 100% on board with James Wood as a top 20 player. I'd love to hear the counter argument. I don't know if I'd follow. Like, think about some of the guys who were top 20 this year. Like Jaron Duran had an ADP, I believe, inside the top 20. Right. Like three pitchers. Like, I just, I think Wood is a bona fide stud going forward. He will have slumps. Anybody with a strikeout rate of close to 30% are going to have slumps. So like, don't abandon ship and think like, oh, well, he's not top 20 anymore because he's, you know, one for his last 27 with 10 strikeouts. Like, those will come. I still think he's a stud going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I were, I have a hard time making the case against him because, as you said, the biggest concern is the strikeout rate. The strikeout rate has come down, which is a good sign in and of itself. But on top of the strikeout rate coming down, like 27%, especially with a 13% walk rate, like that's an acceptable range.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not great, but like if I look at the top 30 players among qualified hitters, and that's 169 qualified hitters, top 30 players in strikeout rate, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. I think about 17, I might have counted wrong, might have been 18, of those 30 players have better than league average WRC plus. They're over 100. There's a handful of guys, like there are some guys up above 30% strikeout rate in Riley Green, Byron Buxton, O'Neill Cruz, Logan O'Happy. All of them are 124 to 131 in their WRC plus. Right? They are 25 to 30% better than league average despite that strikeout rate. And Wood is striking out a lot less than those guys, right? Like his 27% is much better than that. Now that's not to say that like those are the comps, that's the kind of player he like. I'm just pointing out that like even being 3 to 5 percentage points higher on strikeout rate, you can still be successful. You can still be a guy that people are excited about and feel good about going forward. And so I don't think his strikeout rate has risen to the level of being a concern, except that it's going to maybe, you know, like I said, it'll create some slumps here and there, right? Because he gets some bad batted ball luck for a week and he strikes out so much that there's just the floor is not as high as it might be for someone else. Fine. If you want, let's call it a cautionary tale at some level. This is going to sound like a weird cautionary tale because this guy has been good. But the guy to look at it where things might, I don't know if end up is the right word. I'm trying to think about the right way to phrase this. But Ellie De La Cruz is a similar talent in terms of just when, you know, he makes great contact when he makes contact. The strikeout rate has been an issue. He draws a decent number of walks. Ellie is more speed and less power than Wood, but they both are good power and good speed. But Ellie has settled in as sort of a 110 to 115 probably WRC plus kind of guy. He's actually down to 104 this year. And I think that that's sort of the downside, I think, at this point for Wood, if that makes sense. And it's just a question of what happens as pitchers, I don't know if figure him out is the right word, but like, do pitchers find better ways to pitch him? Do they find ways to limit the hard contact? Do they find ways to drive up that strikeout rate a bit? And then what happens is his BABIP drops, right? Because it's probably going to come down from where it is now. I think it's his BABIPs around 350 for Wood. Ellie, who should run high BABIPs because he's so fast and hits the ball so hard, has a 318 BABIP this year. And what's going to happen with a guy like Ellie is he, as much as he strikes out, when the BABIP drops to even a 318 level, he's going to end up as a 104, just above average sort of bat overall. Now, for fantasy, he's still going to be special because like that 104 WRC plus comes with 11 home runs, 17 stolen bases, and he's on pace for 100 runs and 100 RBIs, right? So like, I guess what I'm getting at here is like when I look at what the downside is, if the downside is sort of this theoretically slow start from Ellie De La Cruz, where he's not been as good an overall hitter as we thought he might be, he still looks like an early draft pick. And that's sort of the bad outcome. So like, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's like when I start to try to paint the picture of like, what does it look like if things, you know, I don't want to say that things go wrong. Cause like I should be clear. Like there's a world where things go really wrong for Wood, right? The strikeout rate blooms, pitchers figure out that he can't hit a certain pitch, whatever. Like things could go bad. I just don't think that's going to happen. He's so young. He's already shown he can make adjustments. I think there's probably upside beyond what he's doing because of that ability to make adjustments and that the fact that he's so young. I just look at it and I'm like, yeah, the realistic downside, the realistic concern I have is that he's a more power, less speed version of Ellie Dela Cruz. And that's still going to be a good player.
That's still probably a top 10 player, let alone top 20, which was the question.
Right. Right. And the difference between them right now is that Wood is running a 288 batting average while Ellie's is 252. Right. That really is the primary difference as far as I can tell, other than, again, the different speed power combination. And yeah, Ellie on the player radar is 10th right now. Stolen bases still carry a little bit of extra weight, so maybe, you know, a more power, less speed version of Ellie Dela Cruz probably falls lower than 10th. But outside the top 20, I don't think so. So yeah, I'm buying James Wood top 20 moving forward. Let's keep going with the outfielders, because I feel like we're not going to get through this full list, and so maybe we'll talk outfielders and other bats this week and come back to other stuff later. One of the names I mentioned ahead of Wood on the player radar for now is Pete Crow Armstrong. And it's interesting, he's ahead of Wood. We just talked about, is Wood a top 20 player moving forward? PCA, I don't know. Maybe we should be asking the same question. Maybe we should be asking, is he a top 20 player going forward? I don't know if that's too high, right? I mean, the reality is, as prospects, you looked at Wood and you were like, man, if he can control the strikeout rate, the sky's the limit. That wasn't the story on PCA, the prospect, right? The story on PCA, the prospect, was maybe his defense will keep him in the lineup enough to steal some bases and have value. And that's, he's been a whole other thing. But are you buying PCA as a top 20 player going forward as well?
I'm not buying him as top 20. I think as top 30, I can feel more comfortable with that. I feel like right now he is like what we hoped Jaron Duran was this season. Everything went right for Duran, like even still, it's more power. But PCA is like a tough follow up to James Wood, because like you said, they're very comparable on the player rater and the surface numbers are both amazing. But how they're getting there is super different to me. James Wood is so much skill and ability. And that's not to say that PCA doesn't have those things. But you look at PCA's pulled air percentage, and it's no surprise that he is hitting 15 homers, which is probably five more than most people thought he was going to finish the season with. And yet it's only June 1st and he has 15. That pulled air percentage is over 28% this year, meaning 28.7% of the balls that he puts in play are pulled and in the air. That is that's impressive. And that's going to yield you high totals when it comes to home runs. And so I'm not saying that like what he's done is fake, but when we compare him to James Wood, or since we're just following him with James Wood, the max exit velocity for PCA is 108.6. That's right around where Jeremy Pena was, who we were discussing earlier, who I also just, that's not an impressive number. He's basically when he's putting the ball in the air, he's maximizing everything that he can do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that will yield results, but I feel like it's less sustainable than what we got going on from James Wood. Let alone the fact that PCA's strikeout rate is actually kind of comparable to James Wood's at 25.3%. Woods is worse, but it's comparable. He doesn't walk. He's walking at 4.5%. That's even down from last year, or is it 5.1%? So when those slumps come for PCA, like they will, and like they will for James Wood, I think they're going to be a little bit uglier because he doesn't impact the ball as well. There's a reason why James Wood has one more homer than PCA, despite barely hitting the ball in the air and almost never pulling the ball in the air. And that's because he hits the ball so damn hard, so that when he does actually hit the ball in the air, the thing is smoked. So it's one guy is like, this is like the base of what he can do, and that's James Wood. And the other guy, like, this is as good as it could possibly go for him. And yet their numbers are very comparable. And so for me to say that James Wood is, you know, top 20, but PCA isn't, despite their numbers being very similar, I think there's plenty of reasons to support that. Now, if I had PCA in long-term leagues, which I do in a few, I'm holding. I don't think he's necessarily a sell high, even though based on everything that I just described, you would think he's a sell high. Because I think if he continues to pull the ball in the air and he's this quick, he probably will continue to be a 20, 40, 25, 30, 25, 40 potentially guy, which maybe that is a top 20 player. I just can't commit to that here on June 1st based on what I'm seeing under the hood.
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think they said they're comparable so far, but what Wood is doing when you look at those underlying numbers feels like, despite the strikeout rate, pretty good plate discipline, has a good idea of the strike zone. There's reason to believe he can continue to improve that strikeout rate rather than pitchers being able to figure him out. He hits the ball so hard, so consistently that you know the quality of contact is going to stay high. Like, all that looks good. And yeah, with PCA, I think like the, you know, he has a 48.5% chase rate this year.
Like first percentile.
Yeah. Absolutely elite at swinging at pitches outside the zone. At some point that has to come back to hurt him. Right. And you could say like, oh, he's already running a 25.3% strikeout rate, but like, yeah, under the hood, there's real concern. I have real concern about his plate discipline. I guess I'll say that. Like, I look at his plate discipline numbers and, you know, that chase rate. So if I use StatCast numbers, I was looking at Fangraphs numbers, StatCast numbers, he is the second highest O swing behind Lennon Sosa, at 45.2%. That's really, really high. Obviously, his swinging strike rate at 16.6% is 16.3%. Sorry, is the sixth highest in baseball. And yet he's only running a 25% strikeout rate. Like, he's swinging through pitches more than almost anyone else. He's swinging at pitches outside the zone more than almost anyone else. And his strikeout rate isn't that bad right now. And so I just sort of have a sense. I don't feel great about that going forward. And if he does continue to make contact with pitches outside the zone, that won't be great contact always. And so right now, I mean, and we'll see, you know, how pitchers adjust him and stuff. But right now, PCA looks like a guy who, like, a little bit like Javi Baez before him, to compare him to another Cub. Like, just don't throw him strikes. Just don't throw pitches in the zone.
Yeah, I think that's right. Totally fair. And Javi Baez had some great fantasy seasons. So it's not to say that, like, PCA is a disaster. And just to add, like, a wrinkle into this, I think PCA probably still is a top 50, top 60 player, just because of how much he's pulling the ball in the air and because of his speed, and he's going to continue to play in a great lineup. And you probably drafted him around pick, like, I don't know, 120, I'm guessing, without looking it up. I think he was not a top 100 player. He's going just outside the top 100, which means that in keeper leagues, you probably have him at a value. So you have to be careful if you think that he's like some sell high. Just to add like another wrinkle into this, but I think we're in lockstep here. I do expect a little bit of a regression from PCA, but I think it's fair to say that his season has already been so good. Whatever his season end total is, it's going to look elite. And so just be aware of that going into draft season next year.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that it's not that you would, it's not that you would sell high because he's going to fall off completely. I think if you're selling high on him, it's because somebody comes along and says, I think he's a first round draft pick forever. Right. And I'm willing to pay like that. If you get the same offer for PCA that somebody that you think you would want for James Wood, you should take it. I don't think you'll get that. I think there's enough questions about him that you're going to get more of a like, yeah, I mean, I think he's good. And at that point, like, I would hold him because I think, like, the nice thing, especially in 5x5, is the floor is probably a high batting average and a lot of stolen bases. Not high batting average, an okay batting average and a lot of stolen bases and a lot of runs scored hitting at the top of a very good lineup.
Yeah, and if he continues to pull the ball in the air, his 5x5 floor is pretty good. It is.
Yeah. Let's jump to a couple more outfielders, and Pete, you put one of these names on your list. I'm adding another. The guy you wanted to talk about was Andy Páez. And Páez, looking at the player rater right now, is, I think, around 60th on the player rater. He is exactly 60th. If I filter that down to outfielders, Páez slots in at 16th. The guy I want to talk about is around 85th overall, 22nd among outfielders, and that is Kyle Stowers. Now, if we go look at those two side by side, they have played the same number of games. They have almost the same number of plate appearances. Páez has 221 versus 218 for Stowers. They each have 10 home runs. The differences, and the reason that Páez ends up higher in the player rater, is despite having a lower batting average, Stowers is 286, Páez is 275. Despite that, Páez has 6 stolen bases to Stowers 3, and has 3 more runs, 27 versus 24, 4 more RBI, 36 versus 32. Those last two things are, you know, almost entirely team based, right? Páez is hitting with a full lineup of Hall of Famers, and Stowers is hitting with a full lineup of DFA candidates, and that will make a difference. I actually think if you look at those numbers and realize that in the same games, almost the same number of plate appearances, they're that close in runs and RBIs, that actually says more for Stowers than it does for Páez. Like, it tells me if you switched the two of them right now and they both did exactly what they've been doing, Stowers would be much higher on the player rating. He just would. Those 3 stolen bases wouldn't make up for the difference. Besides the fact that Dodger Stadium is a good power stadium and the Marlins Loan Depot or whatever it's called is a rough place to hit. Like, Stowers has been more impressive on the surface so far this year. Rates lower. So my question for you, Pete, is, are you buying both of these guys who are currently firmly in the top 30? Are you buying both of them or either of them as top 30 outfielders the rest of the way? And if you have to pick one, who are you picking?
Oh, man. I don't think I'm ready to say that either of these guys are top 30 outfielders for different reasons. In Páez's case, I've loved rostering this guy this year. I know he only has 10 homers. It feels like this guy homers every night for me lately. He has kind of been on a tear. I want to pull up like his last month. I think his last month has been a lot better than his first month. Let me put it that way. And you know, you brought up the lineup and said, like, you know, if you flip them, you know, I bet Stowers' production would be a lot better. There's no question about that. But the reality is that one of these guys plays for the Dodgers and one of these guys plays for the freaking Marlins. And that does matter, clearly. Yeah. So because Stowers is on the Marlins, because he has a strikeout rate north of 28%, but he's not named James Wood, right. I have a hard time super buying into him either. So if I was to just buy based on skill and what we're seeing this year, yes, Stowers, I think, objectively looks better than Andy Páez. However, if I needed one guy for the rest of the year, I think I'm taking Andy Páez. I think his glove is providing some stability for the Dodgers, which is the one thing that the Dodgers lack, is stability across the board with all the injuries they've dealt with. And Páez has brought that, and he's hit, and he's not, I think he's been hitting like sixth. So he's not even in the bottom third, 7, 8, 9 of that lineup. Like, this dude is in a pretty good spot in one of the best lineups in baseball history. And again, not to belabor the point, I think that's really important here. So if I need to argue Páez over Stowers based on numbers, surface or under the hood, I can't do it. However, if I'm just going to project forward for 2025, I'm going to take Páez because of all those aforementioned reasons. And Stowers is significantly older. He's going to be 28. Páez is only, I think, 24. And again, Miami is just so bad. So I think if you have either of these guys, you're happy with what they've done so far. They're both pulling the ball in the air a ton. I think if I'm trying to win this year, I'm going to take Páez. And honestly, in long-term leagues, I might take Páez as well, despite, again, there almost being no case under the hood or on the surface at this moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The one thing I will call out is his last month has not been better. So if you go back and look at March, April,
I think
stats,
it's just the rest of my teams have been performing so badly that since this guy actually gets hits, it's like, oh my God, this is Babe Ruth.
Yeah. In March and April, again, they both had similar plate appearances, similar games played. Páez had 6 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 15 runs, 14 RBIs, a 292 average, and a 151 WRC plus. Stowers, a little bit less power, 4 home runs, 1 less stolen base with 2. Actually had more RBIs in the same number of runs and had a 149 WRC plus. If you jump ahead to May, which just ended, Páez has had a 91 WRC plus in May. He's got 4 home runs, 3 stolen bases, a 259 average, but he does not walk. And so he has just a 283 OBP with that 3.5% walk rate in the month. And that's been pulling everything down. Stowers has a 7.5% walk rate. He has fallen off as well, right? It was like 149 or whatever I said was his WRC plus in March and April. Stowers is at 119 for May. So he's fallen off, but he's fallen off to still being really good. Whereas Páez has actually been a below average hitter for the month of May. I think overall I'm with you that I'm not quite ready to just be like, yeah, these guys are locked in as top 30 guys moving forward. Right. They're both, like I said, they're both in the top 30 right now. With Páez at 16th, Stowers at 22nd. But I start to look at guys who are behind them. And here are some guys. So first of all, the guys in between those two, Julio Rodriguez, Mookie Betts, Tyler Soderstrom, who's inflated. Well, Raswell doesn't have him with catcher eligibility, so he's not inflated there. Julio Rodriguez, Mookie Betts, Tyler Soderstrom, Jaron Duran, Willier Abreu. Then you have Stowers. Then behind them, you have TJ Friedel, Jung-Hoo Lee, Juan Soto, Stephen Kwan, Ryan O'Hearn, Brendan Donovan, Cedric Mullins, and Gavin Sheets rounding out the top 30. Outside the top 30, Lawrence Butler, Lars Newbar, Cody Bellinger, Wyatt Langford, Trent Grisham, Hunter Goodman, George Springer, Kerry Carpenter, Jose Altuve, and Trevor Larnach round out the top 40. There aren't a ton of names on there that I'm like, yeah, those guys are definitely going to surpass these guys. But like, I'll take Juan Soto over those two guys moving forward. I will almost everybody between Páez and Stowers, J-Rod, Betts, Duran, all those guys are going to pass Andy Páez. Like they just are. And then you've got some other names in there like Stephen Kwan, who I don't think is inherently for sure going to surpass those guys, but is so steady and reliable that he's not going to fall either, right? They have to keep pace to stay ahead of him. You've got a guy like Lawrence Butler who we can see, we've seen what it looks like when he gets hot, and he could have a 2-week scorcher that moves him into the top 10 starting today. So Wyatt Langford, I would take Langford over these guys moving forward. So I think there's enough guys that are right there to say like, man, they're borderline top 30, but I'm not willing to commit. If I have to pick between the two, I'm not as worried about the age. Like, you know, you made a comment about how like Páez is 24 and Stowers is going to be 28, but Stowers isn't going to be 28 till after Páez is 25. So like, it's not a 4-year gap. It's a less than 3-year age gap. And at 27, Stowers, yes, he's older, but not enough older that I'm like, I'm not buying this. And he was a legit prospect. This isn't some like unexpected out of nowhere breakout. Not that it is for Páez either, but I think the case against Stowers is similar to the case against PCA, which is the swing strike rate is ugly and may lead to more strikeouts. He does not chase nearly as much and he swings in the zone more. He makes much better, from what I can tell, swing decisions than PCA does. He also, Stowers, a 110.3 max EV, 91.4 average EV, 53% hard hit rate, 20.1% barrel rate. His StatCast numbers are legit, right? Like that, he has a 372 WOBA in the season. That's below his X WOBA, right? He has at some level hit better than his results. So that is not to say, right, we've talked about this before, XWOBA, not predictive. I'm not saying he's going to maintain a 372 WOBA. I just think with the walk rate, the smart decisions at the plate, and the ability to make the quality of contact he's been able to make, I mean, like a 53% hard hit rate is really good. And it's not out of nowhere. He had a 51.3% hard hit rate last year. He had other issues last year. He did not barrel the ball as much last year. And so that really hurt him. His strikeout rate was way up last year. It was at 35.4%. There is some risk that it blossoms to that again, right? His swing strike rate is down. His contact rate is up a little bit. So like maybe he'll control that better. But there is some risk that his strikeout rate goes up more. I think he's sort of like, I think 28% is probably about where he'll end up, right? Like we were talking about PCA at 25%, it'll probably go up from there. And he, I think, has worse plate discipline issues than Stowers does. I don't think Stowers is going to go back up to being a 35% strikeout rate guy. And I think even if he goes up from 28 to 29 or 30%, he can still be a good player with good on base because he walks a decent amount as well. And I think he hits the ball hard enough that I'm still in on Stowers.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think I'm necessarily out, particularly because I'm willing to bet the price that a lot of people paid for him is so cheap that he is just looking like an excellent hold. You know, I do think that whiff rate, like on the surface, it looks like, all right, he has improved it a little bit. The strikeout rate's improved a little bit. The chase rate's improved a little bit. If you look at the strikeout rates of some of the players that he lines up against who have similar whiff rates, they're even worse than his 28%. Which does concern me, because if he is this good and Miami is that bad and Miami is that bad, it's not like he's going to start seeing more pitches to hit. If anything, teams are going to start saying, start throwing this guy outside. There's no reason to pitch to this guy. Nobody else in this lineup can hit. So like, I think there's a lot more likelihood that his season gets worse from here than better. It's just, it's starting at such a high point. The question is, how much worse does it get? And if it doesn't get significantly worse, then yeah, he's not a top 30 outfielder, but he's probably in the conversation.
Yeah. And I think if the big thing with Paz is because he has a good idea of the strike zone and doesn't chase a ton, if they throw him pitches outside the zone, that should lead to more walks, right? And he should be on base more. And if he can stay selective, then the pitches that do come in the zone are more likely to be mistakes, and he's going to get opportunities to punish those. And I don't know. I think that there's a better path for him there than there is for like PCA, where it's like, well, if they don't throw him strikes, what's he going to do?
Right.
Is he going to learn to take a walk? Stowers doesn't have to learn to take a walk. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll move from the outfield on to the dirt. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Talked about some outfielders and whether you're buying them or selling them as top 30 guys, top 20 overall. We mostly talked outfielders, let's talk infielders now, and let's look at the hot corner. There's a couple of interesting names here. If I go to the Razzball Player Rater, your top five third baseman, top two aren't a huge surprise. Jose Ramirez is number one. I'm sure everybody is just shocked by that. Rafael Devers, right behind him, number two, not a huge surprise. Number three is a bit of a surprise. Maybe we should talk about him, but we're not going to. It's Eugenio Suarez. The guys that are interesting to talk about that I want to talk about, number four and five are Alex Bregman and Junior Caminero. I'm going to start with this. Bregman is hurt, and he has compared the injury to an injury that cost him 50 games a couple years ago. You know, we're probably not going to see him till late July, August, something like that, which sucks. And if it weren't for that, we'd be having questions about, like, you know, is he going to make a run at being like a top, probably not the top third baseman, because his profile just doesn't fit fantasy as well as Jose Ramirez does. Like, it just doesn't. But man, Bregman looked incredible to start the year before he got hurt. Caminero, I think at some level has been, I don't want to say disappointing, because that's a crazy thing to say for a guy who is 21 years old and having the season he's having. But he started off not quite as hot as I think people thought he would be. And then he's just turned it on lately. And sort of climbed up to being a top five guy at the position. So here's my question for you, Pete, is once both of these guys are healthy, so let's ignore the fact that Bregman's going to be out, because right now, if you're in a redraft, it doesn't matter your format. If you have a choice between Bregman and Caminero, you should take Caminero. He's healthy. He's playing. If it's a redraft league, Bregman, who knows how much time he's going to miss. If it's a keeper league, Caminero's younger. Like, this is an easy choice.
Fine.
From the moment Bregman is back on the field, though, do you think he's still better than Caminero? Is he still higher than Caminero for you moving forward from the moment he's back?
No. Look, Bregman, I have as a top five third baseman for next year. Devers is going to graduate from being a third baseman to just being a DH and not even a first baseman because he's a big baby. So that's going to open up a spot. Manny Machado is still Manny Machado. He's awesome. We've abandoned Manny Machado as like an elite player in the past and then regretted it. I want to remind folks of that. But the power just hasn't been there, kind of oddly enough. And so I think there's room in this top five third base. I think there's two locks. There's Jose Ramirez, who's a stud. And Austin Riley is just back, right? I mean, he was a little unlucky last year, got hot towards the end. Austin Riley is a top five third baseman. So with Devers losing it and potentially Manny Machado going from a top five guy to a top 10 guy, there's room in that top five. So I think Bregman's there. But Junior Caminero, man, I think he's just getting going. It was a slow start, yeah. Which, like, to be fair, is like, you should expect he's 21 years old, right? I think it's fair that he might get off to a slow start, and he's going to have his bumps. He's got a chase rate of 35.5%. That's not good. And yet still, the strikeout rate is under 20%. The max EV is 116.5. Like, he's kind of doing everything we were hoping he would do. It just hadn't really shown at the surface yet, and now it's starting to show on the surface. So there's too many question marks with Bregman when he comes back. Like, you know, how much is this injury going to bother him even when he's back? If the Red Sox want any chance at all this season and it's not looking good, they're going to need Alex Bregman in the lineup. So if he comes back sooner than he should, is that going to impact him? I think it definitely could. His barrel rate this year was an outlier. Like, I think you can believe two things at once. You can believe a guy is a good hitter and is very good, and you're not like saying what he's doing is not real, but you can also suggest that maybe his numbers are a little inflated. And when you look at Bregman's barrel rate, which should not be ballpark dependent, this would be his best barrel rate ever by 3 percentage points. Like, that's a lot for barrel rate. He was barreling at 10.3% of the time. His previous career high was all the way back in 2018 at 7.6%. So I don't think Bregman was going to finish as like a, you know, 40 homer guy again, like he did once before, maybe even a 35 homer guy. He may have been on pace for that. I don't think that was going to happen. Whereas Junior Caminero, even with a slow start, could still end up with those numbers because of how hot he is right now and because he's just probably this good. So I think next year I'll have Caminero ahead of Bregman. I think when Bregman comes back, even though to this point in the season he had been better than Caminero, I guess, right? I would still prefer Caminero, but that's not to say that Bregman is not elite. I think I'll have both these guys as top five third baseman next year.
Yeah, and I think to talk a little bit more about that slow start from Caminero, because it's like, you'll look at his season line right now and you're like, what are you talking about, slow start? Like, other than like a low OBP, everything looks good. Like, what are we talking about, slow start? As of May 20th, right, we're talking 12 days ago, 11 days ago, whatever it is. On May 20th, he went 0-for-4. At the end of that game, he had a WRC plus of 86. He had a 230, 259, 402 slash line with 8 home runs. Like, that's, it's not good, right? I think we can all acknowledge that.
It's disappointing. Bad. He was drafted as like a top 100 guy. It's disappointing.
Not just disappointing, right? Because like, he could have been a 103 WRC plus, I mean, just above league, you know, above average, and at a 240 batting average. Like, that would have been disappointing. This is bad. He was a bad hitter through May 20th overall. That's 185 plate appearances. Over his next 38 plate appearances, right, he increased his season line from an 86 WRC plus to a 120 WRC plus. So the day that he went that 0 for 4 on the 20th, he got a day off on the 21st. The team had a day off on the 22nd. So they gave him basically 2 days. You know, you see this sometimes, young players, like, hey, take a day off. Then we have a day off. Clear your head. Let's see where you come back. He has since then struck out only 13.2% of the time. He was over a 20% strikeout rate before that. His average exit velocity through that May 20th game was 91.4. It's 93.6 since then. He has a 320 WRC plus with 5 home runs in the 38 plate appearances since that, like, couple days off. Like, he has been so good over what is, let's see, 9 games. He's been so good over those 9 games that he went from being a bad hitter to being a very good hitter for the season, which is wild, right? And maybe he should have been in our head-to-head heroes discussion, because that's an insane stretch.
No, I still prefer Zach Littell.
Fair enough. We knew we were coming back to Caminero later anyway, so there was no need to bring him up earlier. So it is crazy how much his season has turned around in the last 9-10 days. And, like, I'll tell you, a week or so ago, I've been talking about some trades in League One. The team that has Caminero is buying. A week or so ago, I thought he was a pretty good trade target for me as a seller. And now his manager's like, I don't think I can do that. Now, it also matters that his manager doesn't really have another option at third base. And so unless we were working out a trade for a third baseman, it didn't really make a lot of sense. But it's just wild how much his season has turned around. And now when you look at his season line, you see a 272 BABIP and you feel like it should be better than that, which will help bring his average up from a 265, his OBP at 291. That really remains the one sort of concerning thing, I think, is he does not draw walks. He's got a 4% walk rate on the year, and that is not something that's been pulled up in this 9-game scorcher he's had. He's only walked 2.6% of the time. He has one walk over those 9 games. It was in those first games, that first game. So in his last 8 games, he has not drawn a walk. He's brought the strikeout rate down, which is great, but you'd like to see him have a little bit of a better idea of the strike zone, be able to get himself on base at a higher rate than he is right now. But he's just swinging a lot and making great contact, and you'll live with that. And you would think, like, understanding, hey, what pitches should I spit on is the kind of thing that a 21-year-old might learn over time. I guess, you know, he'll be 22 in a month. So he's got to start learning fast, I guess.
Yeah, he's getting old quick. Well, for what it's worth, the projection systems have the walk rate going up anywhere from like 1.5% to 2% kind of across the board, yeah, which is still not good, but it's much better than 4%.
Yeah, and I think the big picture here with Caminero is he's probably not going to be a high OBP guy. I don't think he'll be a low OBP guy. Like, the projections, you know, anywhere from 303 to 317. I think that 315 to 320 is probably more realistic, but I think that's the kind of line you're looking at, is like a 320 OBP, 480 to 500 slugging type guy with a bunch of home runs, a few stolen bases. I think that's where Caminero is likely headed. That's it. That's my only concern, is the on-base percentage. And maybe the league, you know, league where I'm looking to trade him, where I thought I might be able to trade for him is an OBP league. And so, you know, maybe I shouldn't want him, but I do. I think I'm with you where I think that, you know, once Bregman is back and healthy, I have these guys both as sort of the top tier of third baseman behind Ramirez. You know, I think Jose is a tier unto himself moving forward once Devers is out of the picture.
I'd put Riley ahead of them too.
Yeah, he might be ahead of them, but I just think he's in, like, I haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about how I would break those guys up. But if you told me, if somebody was like, no, I think Caminero is going to be ahead of Riley, okay. I'm, I, it's, I don't know that I agree, but I don't disagree strongly enough to be like, no, they're in different tiers. Like it is not for me, Jose tier one, Riley tier two, and then these guys.
That's totally
Jose tier one, these guys, including Riley in tier two. If I'm thinking about, like, putting it a different way, if I go into a draft next year and Bregman, Caminero, and Riley are all available in the draft, which one of those guys I want will depend an awful lot on draft cost. I'm not going to jump ahead of anyone to grab one of those three guys. Right? Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
And,
I do think
and that to me, it puts them in a tier, right? Like, I don't, if I think, like, I will take Jose before somebody else grabs a third baseman, depending on what else is on the board, blah, 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 because I think he's a tier above. If I get to my second pick, third pick, whatever it is, when these guys are starting to come off the board and all three of them are available and I need a third baseman, there's a good chance I'm going to take something different and wait to see which one of the three comes back to me.
That does make sense. I think, man, this is like so anti-Red Sox, but I think I might feel like it's, if we're talking about 2026 drafts and 2026 auctions, yeah. I think it's Riley and Caminero are maybe in the same tier, and then Bregman is just right behind them. But I think I might, if my backup option is Bregman, I may be like, okay, you know what? I do want Caminero right now.
Yeah, I think some of that will depend on what we see rest of season.
Yeah.
When, you know, if Bregman comes back and picks up right where he left off, it is going to be really hard to ignore that.
I mean, at that point, it'd be hard to take Riley over him, to be honest with you.
Right.
He was definitely much better. Yeah, that's fair.
I just think like it's all very close. If Caminero starts to take some more walks and maybe even brings the strikeout rate down a little bit, just shows those signs of growth and development that you want to see, then I start to be like, oh man, like there might be another level in his game. Yeah. And then maybe that changes things. But right now today, if I had to do a draft, I think I would take whichever one of those guys falls to me and prioritize a different position.
Are we being unfair to Jazz Chisholm, or is he just not in this group? He's hurt a lot. He was bad before he got hurt. But he went 24-40 last year, the 250 average, and those numbers were crazy if you just paste them out in pinstripes.
I don't think we're being unfair to Jazz. I mean, you know, yes, he'd be like, you commented he'd been terrible to start the year, but like, he was walking at a higher rate than he ever had before. The strikeout rate was up, but like, he's always been sort of a high strikeout guy. That 200 BABIP is just straight up not real. So I think his start to the season was better. Like, he has a 200 BABIP and still has a 104 WRC plus, which is not that far behind his 110 from last year. Now, it's far from what he did with the Yankees last year, but like, I think Jazz is still the guy we thought he was, but part of the guy we thought he was is he strikes out a lot, which makes him a little streaky. He's had injury issues on and off throughout his career. Like, he played 147 games last year. That's the most he's played in his career. Mm-hmm. He only played 124 in what was really his first full season. He got 21 in 2020, but that was the shortened season and his debut and all sorts of stuff. But 124, then he only played 60 in 2022, only played 97 in 2023. Then he had the 147 last year, and he's going to cap out at what, 110, 115 this year by the time all said and done. And that's if he stays healthy the rest of the way, which isn't a given. So I don't think we're being unfair to him by leaving him out of this conversation, because on a per game basis, he belongs in the conversation. He might even be the best of them for 5x5 because of his speed, but he's just not going to reach the numbers they are. He's just not.
I think that's right. I just brought him up because of his ADP going into the season, but at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that was hard with Jazz, the thing that drove up his ADP was obviously he was so good with the Yankees, and he was healthy last year. He only missed 15 games. So you had this moment in time this offseason where it was like, new team, new stadium, look how well he hit in that stadium. We all knew he would hit well in that stadium, and he was a good fit for that stadium. He's a good fit for that roster. He's going to score a ton of runs. Like, everything was sort of going the right direction. And on top of that, you could look at his injury history and say, look, guys are hurt until they're not. And last year he was not. And so now, maybe, you know, has Jazz turned a corner and like, we're going to start to see him play 140, 150 games a season. Coming out of this season, that same thing is technically true. You could still sit there and say like, guys are injured until they're not. But instead of coming off 147 game season, you're coming off another 110 game season, 115 game season. And that's just, it's going to drop him down. Just is. All right. Well, we had a whole list of guys to talk about, and we'll have to talk about the rest of them next time because we're out of time here.
For us, yeah, we did pretty good there. Well.
And help me think through some of these selling decisions I'm going to have to make sometime soon, sadly. So anyways, Pete, thanks for your time. Listeners, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week.